Stephenie Meyer's Twilight books have long been interpreted as allegory about abstinence. Loving a vampire could kill you. But in the last book and the new film, Breaking Dawn Part 1, Bella and her vampire lover Edward finally marry and consummate their love. Before the wedding, Bella receives a gift from her parents.
Wow, thank you so much. It's your first family heirloom. Pass on to your daughter and her daughter.
It's a beautiful jeweled comb, but the daughter Bella ultimately has is, as Harvard lecturer Sue Weaver Shopp says, a new allegory of society's discomfort with racial and ethnic hybridity. Wow, abstinence was easier to grasp. The Twilight books have sold over 100 million copies. The three previous Twilight films have earned almost $2 billion. Harvard Extension School Associate Dean Sue Weaver Shopp, who teaches a course on the vampire in literature and film, has just seen Breaking Dawn Part 1 and joins us. Sue, welcome.
Thank you.
And what'd you think?
The film is not all that one would have hoped it to be, I guess is the best way to put it. Certainly in the first half of the film, women viewers are going to be very excited about the fulfillment of their dream from the first three books, namely that they would get to attend the wedding of Bella and Edward, that it would be beautiful, that everyone would be dressed beautifully. Bella's wedding gown is all we hoped it would be.
Well, in fact, let's give a little taste. The wedding.
I, Edward Cullen, take you, Bella Swan.
For better or for worse.
To love.
To cherish. As long as we both shall live.
Oh, OMG. I could just hear my nieces, you know, when that moment happens. Of course, we have some foreshadowing there, as long as we both shall live, because vampires live forever. The next event is the honeymoon. But the Stephenie Meyer, who is a Mormon, these books have been about abstinence. How do they deal with the next event, the culmination of this love?
Well, the build-up in the first three books has definitely been extremely erotic because we've come, well, full circle watching these characters' passion build for each other and, at the same time, Edward's reluctance to have sex with Bella has kept Bella frustrated. It's kept us frustrated. And so we do finally get the honeymoon moment we were hoping for. The setting is beautiful. Edward and Bella, of course, are completely enchanted with each other, though feeling a little awkward. Edward is still a little anxious because he spent 109 years learning to control his emotions and being afraid of them. And now at last, with Bella's encouragement, he's going to give it a try.
Okay, it begins with a suggestion from Edward.
Do you want to go first one?
Yeah, that sounds nice. I could use a few human minutes.
Don't take too long, Mrs. Cullen.
This is the only point in the entire film when the entire audience was silent, because everyone was entranced by this moment that we'd all been waiting for. And, of course, when they finally do make it to the bed, even though Stephenie Meyer quickly has a nice fade-out in the book where we don't really get any details whatsoever. It's extremely frustrating. In the film, we actually do have a couple of minutes of very expressive, very emotional, very fulfilling sex between Bella and Edward, though discreetly PG presented.
Because I was going to say, you know, many of the fans are under 18, so it has to be PG.
Yes.
I haven't had the pleasure of seeing it yet, but I understand one shot is Edward's hand on a bedpost, and he's gripping it so tightly that the whole bed explodes.
Yes. The bed definitely explodes. This is in the novel, of course, the idea that he is so strong and so powerful. And, of course, in attempting not to hurt Bella, he grips the headboard of the bed and it does explode.
So then, because of that night, very quickly, is this. Let's listen.
Can you tell me what's going on?
I'm late. My period's late.
She becomes pregnant, difficult pregnancy, but explain this here because I thought vampires reproduced by biting people.
Yes, that is normally how they reproduce. This is a most unusual circumstance. It is one of the problems in the book. The whole idea of Bella becoming pregnant after 17 days of marriage with this entity that no one knows whether it's a human or whether it's going to be a monster, but she seems to have a sense of it as this child that she's going to love and that she's going to bond with almost instantly. Everything is fast-forwarded in terms of Bella's coming to terms with the fact that she's going to be a mother at age 18, when in the rest of the novels, Bella was reluctant even to get married and never once mentions the desire to be a mother.
Well, another problem potentially is that the birth of the child is very, you know, almost violent and bloody.
Unfortunately, since the film has been broken into two halves now, we end up with not exactly the kind of gratification that you hope to have at the end of a film. We're taken up to the point of the birth, and then we're taken to the point where Bella, who is about to die as a result of the childbirth, Edward has to make a decision very quickly, and the decision has been made a little early on that he will inject her with vampire venom and therefore turn her into a vampire and she will come back to life. So we sort of knew that it was going to culminate with the injection of the vampire venom and Bella being reborn as a vampire. And in fact, that is where the film ends. The problem, of course, with that whole episode in the story is that when she does come back to life again, she's going to have the husband that she wants. She's going to have a baby, which seemed impossible at the beginning. It's as if instead of letting the obvious problems of marriage and a child like this and having to face the things that Edward has been telling her all along she's going to have to face, and the things she's going to have to give up, she actually doesn't have to give up anything at all. But we really have to stay tuned for part two of Breaking Dawn to see how all of that's going to come off. We're sort of left with a cliffhanger.
Obviously, this appeals to people, but you and others have said, you know, it's blasphemy to fans of the books, but they're not all that fantastically written. So what is it? What is the pull?
The one thing Meyer really, really does very well is she knows how to explore the intensity of adolescent emotion. She understands that when you are young, when you are feeling like an outsider, when you're falling in love for the first time, when you lose a lover for the first time, you don't experience these things as minor shakeups in your life. You experience them with enormous, enormous intensity. And I think that is one of the things that readers, especially female readers of all ages, really connect with. The other thing that she does that I think has been an important draw to readers, she understands fully about female fantasy, the fantasy of having an incredibly handsome, intelligent, wonderful human being who is completely devoted to you. And when he says he will love you forever, he really means it. So it almost seems to me that since Meyer actually refers to Romeo and Juliet in the Twilight novels, and she refers to the relationship of Kathy and Heathcliff in Wuthering Heights, those relationships didn't end well in Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
The principals die, and in Wuthering Heights, Catherine dies, and Heathcliff is miserable forever. It's almost as if she's rewriting those books to suggest that it doesn't have to end badly. It's actually possible for a relationship involving star-crossed lovers who theoretically have no chance whatsoever of having their relationship work out, that there's actually a possibility of that. And of course, that's a very attractive fantasy.
Sue Weaver-Schopf, Associate Dean of the Harvard Extension School, where she teaches the course The Vampire in Literature and Film. We'll link you to her 15 reasons to go see Twilight without shame. Sue, thanks as always.
Thank you so much for asking me to come and talk about this.